Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dot Matrix. Oh, gosh, I can't even do that properly.
You want me to start again?
You want to start it? No, I'm fine. Leaving it if you want.
This is live.
This is live. That's what happens when you say you want to do it. And I say, yeah, sure, I'll start. Welcome to the Dot Matrix at thedotmatrix.com and on Facebook and all the other places we have it. iTunes, of course. It's Justin.
And Sean.
And after that fumbly beginning, we are ready to go on episode 34.
Well, we're a little rusty.
We are. It's last time it was like May 3rd or something.
May 3rd.
Now it's the end of June.
I think every podcast I say, oh, that was the longest time between, and it just keeps getting longer and longer, but no more.
Well, I mean, I think that's the nature of podcasts is you do it whenever you can, right?
Yeah.
Like that the link I sent you the other day that a friend of mine sent me about you look nice today or whatever it is. And
right.
It's like three guys chewing the fat and talking about guy shit and... And I think they rarely do one. They just on occasion they sort of throw one together. So they can have, you know, rare times to do it and sporadic scheduling. So can we?
Yeah, and we'll do some research and figure out how we can get our two mics going at the same time like we wanted.
Yeah, well, the exciting thing was on Saturday we were at Jazz Fest in Gastown and here in Vancouver, and then on the way finishing up the day. Just the two of us on the town, we picked up a new Snowball microphone. So now I have one. It's sitting lonely by the side of the desk. And we're still using yours again. But we got some kick-ass sounds when it got that setting too. But we just couldn't get the two mics to work together. So we're back to normal.
We'll get it going. Like it was sort of starting to act like a PC there for a bit. But... we'll get it going. Our trust.
For the record, that was my joke.
Yeah, sorry, I said that. I'm sorry, Justin. It's just the tandoori malaise.
Topic number one. That was a good dinner.
Was that yummy or what? What did you eat? Fish vindaloo?
Fish vindaloo, yeah. Oh, gosh.
So describe that for our listeners. What is that like?
It was, well, the fish was a little dry, actually. It was a little bit overcooked, but the sauce of the vindaloo, which is a little bit spicy, but just really nice and rich and just luscious sauce. I don't even know how to describe it, but it just didn't matter. The fish was great with it. And then those giant naan, like the naan was the size of like a forearm, you know? That's that length. It was huge.
Yeah, and it's so good. I had the Banga masala, so cauliflower, excuse me, that's the Abu Gobi.
Right.
Eggplant, kind of like a curry, I guess, or eggplant sauce, whatever, and on rice, and we both got this that huge thing of naan to share, so we are full. That was good, because we worked out, right?
Yeah, we have this little schedule going, like we do a workout, we do dinner, and then we end with a podcast.
Yeah, it's great.
But the thing is, like, it's so weird, because it's like, last time we did it was early May, and now it's late June, and it's like 8:41, it says on your Mac. And it's still bright as day out.
Yeah, but more cold.
Yeah.
No, it's been a slow summer, I think, huh?
Well, various people's Facebooks, who statuses of people who I know who live here have all been sort of saying, I read a couple of statuses saying, summer, you know it's time, or, you know, things like that.
Hello. Right? Oh, isn't that fun? Facebook's fun. We're still on Facebook. You know, there's people here and there you talk to, friends, you're like, I noticed you defriended me. Was that the case, or did you just leave Facebook and you do a search and they've left Facebook? You know?
Oh.
Yeah, sometimes you just happen to find out. You know, you're going through your friends list every now and again. You're like, oh, who have I not talked to, right?
Right.
And then you don't see them there and you're like, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, I did a little purge. I think we've talked about this before on a podcast, but I did do a purge, and I went through my list and took out like three people. I'm not very good at that.
No.
But actually, I didn't notice. The only couple of people I noticed who I was no longer friends with were people who were, like, I understand why they defriended me. I'm assuming they're still. I didn't actually search to see if they were on Facebook or not still. I assumed they were, but it was more like, oh, well, you know, we met once and then we became Facebook friends, and you're like,
is it necessary? You know,
is it really necessary?
Never like, went anywhere else.
Yeah, I would be totally fine with that, and I was been totally fine with that. When a couple of cases where I'm like, oh, Fine.
Yeah. And that's okay, you know? Like, there was that big defriending that I spoke about on Facebook.
Right.
Yes, I was... I won't say it here, but did I even tell you who it was? I don't think I did.
No.
I just kept going, I've been defriended. And people were counseling me and saying it's going to be okay. That's happened to me too. Full of sympathizers, you know. Empathizers. But it's, I totally get it, you know. Although I was a little shocked in this case. Because, you know, I get along with pretty much everyone.
Right. Well, it took you a while to defriend yourself from my ex, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yes. Sometimes you just have to, you know. People usually, it takes some time to notice, right?
Yes.
But I thought, in this case, I thought, you know, I'll just let it go for a while and then just defriend. Yeah, just disappear. And she probably hasn't even noticed.
Although, did they do the same thing? Not that I'm curious.
You know what? I don't know. I think she may have. I think she's probably like, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Well, let's change topics, shall we? Like, it's been so long since we've done a podcast. So much has happened. There's a new president. Just kidding. Well, we talked about my trip. I've been and back and got sick and, come back from sickness. And then was in Toronto and Ottawa and way before the G8 and G20 stuff. But, and then I was on this course, which was really enlightening for work about how to be a better manager. And what else has been going on? Like, the World Cup has started.
Yeah.
Rue McCallahan passed away. As typically happens whenever a Golden Girls actress passes on, I get calls and emails and messages on my answering machine sending me their condolences.
I can't believe it. Number 3, gone.
Yeah.
And it's so weird knowing that Betty White, 10 years older, still thriving. Like, it's just a marvel, huh?
Well, there's all that Golden Girls resurgence about 3 or 4 years ago when I was really in to sort of watch repeats. And for a little moment, I was part of the in crowd, you know?
We hit the mainstream.
Yeah. And I was proud to say I had all 7 seasons of Golden Girls on DVD. And anyone could come over and watch whatever they wanted to. But no one ever took me up on that offer. I think you maybe have seen a couple of episodes at my place since then.
I watched a couple with you.
But, and then suddenly it all went away again. But then B. Arthur passed away. When Rue McCallahan passed away, I was on YouTube watching some clips and stuff. And they led me to a clip of B. Arthur in her last public appearance before she passed away at the roasting of Pamela Anderson.
Oh,
and really? Basically she went up there and read from her novel that Pamela Anderson wrote.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And that was her last performance.
That was her last performance, yeah.
So are they linked through PETA or something?
I don't know.
It seems kind of odd.
I thought it was just kind of random.
Yeah.
But then she came up, she read from this novel that Pamela Anderson quote-unquote wrote, and it was hilarious. It was just classic Bea Arthur, classic Dorothy timing and humor, sort of look of indignation, of shock, of disbelief every so often, just and not, you know, the double take, you know, the 2 or 3 times.
Yep. Oh, perfect. It's classic. It's so genius.
I was watching different clips of Blanche Devereaux clips, right? Because of Rue McCallahan's passing. And I still... Actually, it's funny because I was someone I know from work, who you met at the gym. And, she had posted some link about... some weird clip about... I think it was like Silver Spoons or whatever. And then I in kind posted that one clip, which is the famous Lebanese lesbian thing from Rue McCallahan, and I posted it on Facebook as a reply kind of thing. And I still think about that as one of the classic lines, the whole lesbian thing, and the whole the other one was, what was the other one? It's the stunned.
Oh, yes. Stunned. Done. Oh, I want to watch watch it now.
Or the third one I always think about one is the one that doesn't get quoted as much, but I still remember as one of the top three, is when Blanche was trying to write her novel and she was up all night, and then Rose was in the kitchen baking something and only used egg whites or making, okay, maybe it was an egg white omelet or something. She, yeah, had these egg yolks,
yeah,
and she put them in a Ziploc bag, these egg yolks, mm-hmm, and was going to give them to charity, but she didn't know what to do with them. Mm. Like, and, you know, of course, Dorothy thought it was stupid, this
ridiculous
thing.
This, ridiculous. Yeah.
And then there's Blanche looking, staring at this bag of egg yolks, like, has been up all night, and she goes, little balls of sunshine, yeah, bag.
Yeah. That I remember.
I love that. I don't know why. It's so senseless. It means nothing, but just that quote was just too hilarious.
And you notice how, like, you know, Bea Arthur's character gets known for the timing and the, but they all had that timing expertise, you know, mm-hmm, where they'd stop and they'd think about it, and then they'd come out with a sentence that you just didn't see coming. And I thought that was brilliant. One of my favorite scenes was the Sonny and Cher, Bea Arthur,
oh,
Estelle Getty. Love that one.
Especially the pushing back the hair that Bea Arthur did.
Oh, yeah. So classic. Well, yeah, she's going to be missed. And it was a shocker. You know, she was the youngest, and yeah, she was the youngest to pass away.
Yes.
And I guess as a stroke or something like that.
She, yeah.
She had a few things.
Yeah.
Problems. Yeah. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
It is.
But so that was, you know, big. That was the sitcom of our childhood. Like, that's.
Pretty much.
There were others we watched, but that was the one. That's where we actually learned a lot of things, I think. I mean, who knew about menopause?
No, I didn't. Who knew about chronic fatigue syndrome? I still diagnose that with people I know on occasion.
Really?
Yes.
You say you have chronic fatigue, yes, syndrome? Yes. Wow. You have CFS. I know all about that, Dr. Ho.
I just don't want to be that doctor that she gave a lecture to in that restaurant in the second episode of the two-parter. After you saw that, you're like, damn.
Yeah, so many classic moments. It's just, even the last couple of seasons had, although not as many, but they had some real great moments where you're like, oh, it's classic.
Yeah, the last classic one was when they lost Sophia in the elevator of a hospital. Oh my. Okay, that's a nice stroll down Golden Girls memory lane.
Yes.
So what do you want to talk about?
Oh, you know, I want to talk about HST.
Ooh, okay.
Because we are 2 days away from HST.
Yes.
Almost 1 day away.
Oh, and you know who we should talk about, which you always talk about?
Mm.
Or not who, sorry, the situation is of Robert Jakansky and the report. We should talk about that,
yes,
as well. But let's just start with HST.
Yeah, well, you know, it's coming up, and my sister forwarded me a piece written by Gordon Campbell, our premier.
Oh, yeah, so you posted that on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. And I did that because, you know, my sister's been trying to explain to me, and I think I'm getting it, you know.
Yeah.
It's taken a while. Trying to explain to me the actual benefits of HST and why it's superior than the tax structure we have now. And she tries to explain all the things that the liberals had difficulty explaining over the last year.
Okay, like?
Why they didn't say, why they were saying during the election their official stance was, no, we're not going to do this, which was just over a year ago.
Okay.
And then shortly after, they're like, surprise, we're gonna do this.
Okay, so what was that? Like,
well, the answer is because when other governments were doing it, like, say, Ontario would do it.
So peer pressure is what is the argument?
Oh, kidding. No.
No, keep going, sorry. Just,
yeah, I could see how one would think that, but reason is because Ontario just spent a few years going back and forth with the government about tax exemptions and not giving into this 13% across the board tax that the HST would have been for all provinces and territories if they all adopted it.
Okay.
Because a couple of the earlier provinces who did already, they went for this 13% tax, and they weren't allowed to exempt a bunch of things that they wanted to, which would have made it a little easier on the people, right?
Yeah, okay.
So every time, according to Gordon Campbell, this was always been discussed with the feds over their last 8 years and probably even earlier, because it's been around since the early 90s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They were always asked about it, and every time they kept saying no, because you're not allowing us to do these tax exemptions. Well, they said that wasn't offered until after the last election, when they got the federal government. So they're basically putting the blame on the federal government.
Sure, yeah.
But they're just trying to explain that, and this didn't get out a lot over the last year, but it's the fact that our province was not going to agree to this until we had confirmation from the government that we were allowed to keep it at 12%, which is the 7% sales tax plus the 5% GST,
yeah,
not 13% to match other provinces. So would have added another percent somewhere, yeah, else just to match. We were able to do that and get a lot of those tax exemptions in there, like diapers or,
yeah,
certain types of products, you know, things, yeah, for kids and stuff. So when the government said, fine, we'll do this, we'll let you go ahead, that's when they started to get the ball rolling. And apparently, according to them, that wasn't until after last election.
Mm, okay.
So, you know, I think to most people that seems to make sense, you know, like,
yeah,
it's like, okay, you know, if it's going to get rid of a lot of administration costs, it's going to do this thing where we had a big discussion about like the trickle down effect where,
right, yeah,
the cheaper things that might be cheaper at the retail level, which, that's the one I don't believe is going to happen.
Right, I don't either.
And then, you know, there's several other reasons, but those are the main ones. And there's a lot of people who are supportive of this initiative that are really the minority here in BC. So,
right,
I think, you know, my sister often gets frustrated, and others who are supporters of it, because there's so much information that people are just not taking the time to understand about it.
Right.
And they're listening to Bill Van Der Zandt instead,
right,
or Delaney or the NDP, who none of them have actually come up with a alternative solution.
Right.
As far as I've heard, as far as my sister's heard. But anyway, yeah, so that's kind of what's been I've been reading about today. I'm trying to pass around just so people have the other angle, even though it's probably written by staffers. Who knows?
Right. But well, it's funny. Is that... You know, that angle actually is very useful to hear,
mm-hmm,
but is that the first time it's come out, or is there documented stories and press releases from the HST that are backdated to when the announcement happened?
Well, they say that there have been, but they admit openly that they haven't done a good job of really pushing it.
Right. Because I think that in many ways is just them finally, or the government finally understanding what the real issue was. It has nothing to do with the economics.
Right.
Right. And we talked about this over dinner, right, or lunch at, we're out at the Jazz Fest on Saturday. And, you know, like when you hear that argument that you've just described, mm-hmm, it actually helps appease some of that concern, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know what, but I think the only way it's going to register with people is if Gordon Campbell, you know, just takes a big, swallows a big humble piece of humble pie and say, you know, we're sorry, we didn't, you know. And I think if he actually uses the word I'm sorry or we're sorry, but this is the situation that happened after the election, and this is, you know,
yeah,
we finally got the exemptions we were hoping for,
right,
and so we had to pull the trigger, because otherwise the only story you hear is they lied and we need the money to, so we don't have a bigger deficit.
Oh, and right? That's one of the other reasons they give, yes.
And I think that's totally the wrong angle.
It is.
You are talking about economics and deficits to people who are concerned about an affront to their democracy, an affront to the process, right?
Yeah.
And that's the classic error. I mean, it's totally classic. I mean, people, yeah, they could have saved a whole lot of heartache if they just said, you know, I know it's going to look bad. It's going to, you know, these people just for some reason don't feel confident in the electorate. And or they're afraid to say I'm sorry because it shows weakness, or maybe there could be litigation if or whatever. But, you know, I think just human decency says that, you know, people are angry because they feel they weren't heard, or they feel that they were lied to. And that has nothing to do with whether or not I'm going to save money on diapers. That has absolutely nothing. Correct. So stop talking about diapers and start talking about exactly what you just said. And absolutely. I think then it would have been so much easier. He wouldn't be the most hated man in British Columbia. Well, there's a lot of hated people in British Columbia, but, you know, up there.
You're right. You're right. It's because all I remember hearing is we're going to use this money we're getting from the federal government over the next 3 years to go into health and education. It's like, okay, well, that's icing. That's really cool.
Yeah.
But tell me the real reason, right? Like, reporter after reporter and like journalistic investigators, you know, like they've all gone in and tried to piece together the timeline from the election onward, and
right,
how this started to get put together behind the scenes. Like, you can't tell me that there was no political angle involved. Yeah. Like, you can't, right? Because that's what they do. Yeah. Right.
Well, and I think the problem is as well in what tends to happen in politics, and I'm sounding very knowledgeable about the history of political systems or not, but you know, like, and I'm not.
Well, but you're more than, you know, the average person, I would
say. Well, I don't know about that, but the sense I get is that, you know, people in power surround themselves with people just like themselves.
Yeah, right.
You know, they don't want to be hearing no, or Obama's the only example you can talk about right now who, you know, when he got elected, talked about, you know, Abraham Lincoln and how he brought all these, you know, a council of enemies together, you know, or, you know, political opponents became part of this cabinet, that sort of stuff. And but no one talks, everyone surrounds themselves with people who are yes men, right? And groupthink would dictate the answer that happened, or the reaction that happened to the anti-HST, is that, you know, probably Gordon Campbell thinks it makes perfect sense. We save this, we manufacturing,
right,
potentially all these economic arguments, and everyone's like, oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah, oh, I'm convinced, oh, I'm convinced.
Right,
and they didn't have that one person. And you don't really need to have a whole team of people, but someone who you could be who would be an honest broker to yourself and say, you know, that's what I think, but, you know, you, Sean, or you, Justin, are on the opposite end. You process things differently. Like, is this going to fly? And all you have to hear is someone say, you know, Gordy, it's not going to fly. You know, try it this angle, and then everything will be fine. But no one says that. I'm sure no one said that.
Or if they did, it was just on deaf ears. It just fell on deaf ears.
Well, you need to ask someone. What, yeah, I mean, they have to surround themselves, or include people who have counter views, but they also have to be ready to hear it.
And I think they have just a lot of yes men too. You know, like, there's so much power involved, and it just seems like we're just going to stay the course, you know? It's like, but they just, what a lot of people are bothered by, but the BC Liberals, is that they show this very business face, business as usual, like it's kind of cold.
Right.
They don't really have a very warm human touch to them, unfortunately.
Rich Coleman.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just it. And so, you know, I think if they just showed a little more just empathy, because this the start of this piece that I read today was, you know, it was two paragraphs of, I understand how British Columbians are angry, and they're asking, how is this affecting my family? And they're asking, I mean, like, the whole first part of it was just like, I totally get
right
why you're mad. But that should have been a discussion had a long time ago.
That should frame the very first thing you ever talk about when you say we're bringing in HST.
Like, see, what I don't understand is, you know, a lot of politicians, when they go on TV and they just talk. Like, why couldn't he just take 10 minutes of TV time?
Right.
And just go and say, okay, this is a big change we're going to do. And this is This is why we want to do it. Why couldn't they just do that? Or maybe they did and I missed it.
Like, oh, no. If he had taken 10 minutes off of television, you would have known about it.
Yeah. Right. And it's, but they won't do that. I don't understand why they just hide in Victoria. I don't know. Anyway, so that's that whole discussion. So we'll see how that turns out. And subsequently, what's going to happen with the petition and all that kind of stuff. So.
Right. Well, I mean, I signed that petition with pride.
Yeah?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And for no other reason than the democratic piece of it.
Yeah.
And I think, like we've talked about this before, I don't disagree with any of those arguments. I mean, the stuff that you just talked about makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I have nothing wrong with it. But I signed that petition to punish the government for doing it the way they did. Because they, and I think a lot of people signed it the same way. And they didn't understand, and they didn't anticipate that, you know, and I think it's just another, like, when you think, I'm not trying to juxtapose it with, like, protesters in G20 or something, but, you know, this kind of stuff happens because people don't feel they've been heard. And I've said it already, like, 5 minutes ago, I'm saying it again, or people feel they are excluded from a process, the process, their community, what have you. And it has nothing to do, I mean, it has a lot, I mean, and how you react to it is very different, right? So if you have certain morals and certain values, you may react to it by rising up or by smashing windows or putting on dark clothes and trying to wreak havoc and like you do in Toronto in the G8 or the G20 stuff and all the vandalism, right? Like protesting that sort of stuff. And I don't necessarily agree with that either. But, you know, a whole other set of people with a whole set of other different views will take a petition route or will take a whatever route. And I'm not naive. I'm pretty sure, you know, Bill Vanderzam saw an opportunity here and just took it. And, you know, well, so, but someone has to. Someone has to drive it. And, of course, the NDP isn't doing a great job at...
I hear nothing from those people.
Well, and they're...
They've been so silent.
And we talked about this on Saturday. Like, when they are talking about it, they're talking about it about how it's going to hurt families and it's going to cost more. And they're just, again, saying they're against it for the opposite reason. But then, you know, like you were saying on Saturday, that when if they ever get into power, will they ever get rid of HST? Probably not.
Probably
Like when
not.
The Liberals came in, they didn't get rid of GST.
Right, the federal Liberals.
Yeah, even with Sheila Copps resigning and winning her seat back, didn't happen. Oh, that's old political stories. So shall we move on to Robert Schakansky?
We should.
Because when I haven't obviously read The Big Tomb, and I love how it's like, sorry, I'm kind of not be sounding too excited because it's a really awful situation. We've talked about this before, but how awful it is. But I thought it took a lot of, you know, it was an interesting thing to call it why. Right.
Oh, you know, the package.
The actual report and the findings and the recommendations, which apparently was the last thing he said in Polish before he was tasered and went to the ground. That's what he said. And just very poetic and somewhat cheeky, I guess. But I mean, it's okay because the way the report reads, from my understanding, and I haven't read it, but I've read the reports on the stories on it, is that just lambasting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly opening the door or telling the province to reopen the door around criminal charges. And they have. They're looking at it again. Don't know where it's going to come to, but...
I remember when they announced that they weren't going to, and everyone's like, excuse me?
Why? Well, and the idea that the video evidence that it confirmed the stories of the RCMP officers... And the judge in this report was like, really? Where was that?
The fact that someone actually says that.
Yeah.
It's so backwards.
Yeah. Like, it's like, you cannot hide from the fact that it was a political decision that those RCMP officers weren't charged. And, you know, again, I mean... We've said this before, and we tried to be very even-handed about the situation because we're not police officers, we're not RCMP, we don't know what it's like to be there, and we're not trained in that way. But the video evidence is so clear-cut. that it's I don't think anyone would come to a different conclusion than what that judge came to. I was just so pleased. I was like, it didn't get whitewashed away. Nope. It wasn't sugarcoated. Like, that guy apparently used some pretty harsh language.
Yeah, he did. He did.
It's awesome.
And I fully agree. I think it was amazing that this is actually going to open the door to the potential of these guys getting charged. Because to me, it's all the way... It's not even the tasering. It's everything that happened before the tasering. It's them walking up like, we're just gonna do what we have to do here. You know, they were very calm, collected. They hopped over the bar. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's the way they marched in was so just, whatever. There's four of us, one of him. They had him surrounded. He was... not throwing things at that time. Like, you know, everyone's like, well, but he was throwing stuff around. Well, the cops didn't know that. Well, or if they had been told, they didn't see him throw anything.
Yeah, I mean, even if someone calls 911 and says he's throwing stuff around, he might have been that moment that person called. But the moment you get there and exactly. He's not holding anything but a chair or whatever that was.
A stapler.
Like, I mean, you just can't say, well, you know, he was throwing stuff. But at that second, at that moment, he was not. And he wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
The whole alcohol thing is out the window. Because he was waiting for 10 hours. I don't care how many drinks you've had, after 10 hours you're sober again.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even... tell me that had anything to do with it. I mean, the stuff they were throwing shit at a wall, like when these cops were talking about their reasoning for doing what they did. I mean, it's... Even they saw the video evidence before they put their defense in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, it's unbelievable. It's to me, this is single-handedly the most... shocking event in our province's history that I can remember. Like, maybe Air India before that. Well, you know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable.
And it's, well, and that's come back in the news too.
Yeah. With
that, you know, that report came out 2 days before the Braidwood report. And, but you know what's fascinating about both, or what's just, no, that's fascinating, just really sad and really tragic and maddening is that, you know, both of those situations, and particularly the Jakansky piece, because it's more current and it's very singular, it has nothing to do with terrorism, it just has to do with, like, your everyday processes. That, and I think that's what I would, can just guess, wager a guess, is what haunts his mother.
Yeah.
To this day, is how within that 9 or 10 hour span that he was sitting there, this could have ended many different ways if, you know, someone gave a rat's ass. You know, I mean, in the report, I mean, in the findings, they talk about how, you know, that person told his mother to go home because he never got on the flight, but that person never checked. So why would you even say that? Like,
to me, know, like, that's... in some ways, almost as damaging as what those cops did.
It set a whole course in motion. Like, it's as they do in Law and Order. Was it depraved indifference?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it would be depraved indifference that would lead to charges, because I haven't seen enough Law and Orders to know that it's going to make that next step, right? But just carelessness. That's just huge carelessness. And the fact that you're in an international airport, and you know, and that guy passed through customs. He had his passport. You know, and if that custom officer probably didn't communicate with that guy very well, or he could identify really clearly, even if he or she spoke Polish, to say, okay, hold on here, we're going to get YVR staff or whatever to bring in an interpreter to follow you through the rest of the process, right? That wasn't available, apparently. I mean, obviously there's no system for that, right? Or, and there's no welcome center with a whole bunch of languages, or, you know, like, it just, there was about 20 different things that they could do with, you know, minimal cost, but those costs add up, so you choose not to do any of them.
Yes.
Where in this case, it culminated in a loss of life, you know, and it's just tragic in many ways.
It's almost hard to put into words, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I had always myself inside been wondering, what about the airport? I mean, we all talk about the actions of the cops, which is deplorable, but you're right. Like, she didn't even got to the cops.
Yeah.
Like, 10 hours of time? Like, that's unheard of.
Well, YVR must be thanking their lucky stars that the cops ended up doing what they did in terms of, like, the PR stuff, because they got left off the hook really easily.
And I'm wondering why.
And, you know, and I think, hopefully, and from my understanding, they've had some changes, but did someone really have to die for those changes to happen? Like,
really, it should amount to be just someone getting lost in the airport for a couple minutes. That's what that should have amounted to.
I mean, it doesn't get to be cute like The Terminal with Tom Hanks. Sometimes it's pretty all tragic.
And I think this is the third major time that we've discussed this. And I think in the last two times, I'll say it again. It's the video. Like, none of this would be happening. No inquiries. Yeah. No nothing. To me, the biggest bottom line is the fact that the cops were full of shit. And this video proves them wrong. Like, if we didn't have this, we'd be in a whole other way. To me, that's the one major point.
Well, you know, that's actually really true. Because you think about sort of, I remember when they were... video cameras were starting to pop up in all sorts of phones, right? And this is very different than, let's say, it being caught on a security camera, right? This is someone's phone directed directly at this scenario, right?
Yes.
And then people question, oh, well, it's an invasion of privacy. People are going to shoot upskirt videos or people changing in the changing room or doing really lame-ass videos for no reason. Why would anyone want a video camera? You know, and there's a lot of that too, I'm sure, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think the access to this kind of technology and the ability to distribute it in a quick and mass way, the whole viralness deck, it is changing the nature of democracy in a way that an electoral change or whatever just hasn't been able to do, you know? Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Very good point. Yeah.
And it keeps people accountable. Like, if, you know, like going back to HST, if for some reason someone recorded something and Gordon Campbell going, ha ha ha, we pulled the wool out of their eyes, or like, I'm, you know, and I'll give the guy a benefit of the doubt. It probably didn't happen that way. I'm sure, you know, the article he wrote, there's hopefully a lot of truth to it. Who knows, right? But like, then everything would be blown out of, like, dead stop. This would not be happening, right? Mm-hmm. You think about that woman who was the minister of whatever in the Chalk River nuclear stuff and saying how, you know, and she's like, oh, it's a sexy problem. I'm going to solve this and be famous or whatever. Like, and the aide had recorded that. Like it's those kind of things more than anything keeps people accountable. Like TMZ, the world of TMZ keeps people more accountable than in a much different way, in a more immediate way than Sheila Fraser doing, you know, looking through the back expenses of MPs. Because that's going to take a year. It won't even, like they said, the report will be due out in September 2011. Right? Like, in some ways, I mean, it still provides a lot of, you know, stuff in terms of accountability and stuff. But there's a huge lag time. And sometimes you need that lag time because you want to be thorough. But sometimes you do a video and it gets out of context and it happens so quickly, and you don't get a chance to explain, and you're gone, and there could be a legitimate reason. But there's a balance, you have the balance of both, right? You need to have, for a long time, you only had those long processes that could be totally covered up, or the report could get released, and it's a whole year and a half after the fact, and people, you know, have lost interest, or they moved on, or whatever. So you need the immediacy of some of these things to sort of balance it all out, you know?
Absolutely. I keep thinking about what we'd be going through as a public if that video didn't exist. You have eyewitnesses, you'd have and the thing with eyewitnesses is that they're not all the same.
Right.
Whenever you have like 5, 10 people watching the same event, you have different wave of it being described, so you can't
Yep.
totally rely on that.
Yep.
You have the cops say, we know now that we have to be so skeptical of what, and not just cops, but like people of authority in general have to say about something. There probably would have, been enough people to be like, okay, something really happened here. Well, it could have even got to an inquiry, because other things get to an inquiry without a video.
True.
But we would have nothing nearly as thorough. It would have been he said, she said, a lot of it. The cops wouldn't, there would be no question of cops not being charged. And you'd have a mother who is even in more agony because she doesn't really know what happened at all.
Right.
Like, as bad as it is to watch her son die on the camera, at least she knows exactly what happened.
Well, she's a lot closer to justice than she would have ever been
Yeah.
otherwise.
And as excruciating as that is, it's got to have helped in other ways. So it's just like, it's all about the video. It's the video.
It's true.
So anyway, there we have it.
Oh,
Well, that
gosh.
was, we had to get that off our chest, didn't we?
Yeah, well, you know.
And it will keep going.
Yeah. Well, and once they get charged.
We're back.
Yeah, we're back on it. But like it's one of those topics that you can't be on the fence on, you know? Like it gets to the core of what you believe is a human decency thing, you know?
And the funny thing about, those four cops, you have the guy, the ringleader guy, like the leader, commander guy, whatever,
Right?
who has had some actual troubling history of his own
Yeah, something like
with like
he's one of.
spousal abuse and all this other kind of stuff,
Yeah,
I
one of the
believe.
four is suspended on other charges or other
Like,
allegations of some
yeah,
kind.
like I think it's drinking and hitting someone else,
Jeez.
in a car or something like that. I mean, I'm just barely recounting what I know, but we'll check into it. But yeah, there's a lot of baggage with the commander guy. And then there's the guy who actually shot the laser, the
Taser.
taser rather. Well, I mean, as bad as it is to be that guy, like that's gotta suck, right? You're the guy who killed him, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, he was the one who would pull the trigger every time he heard, hit him again, right? So it's those are the kind of in the moment things that I can understand.
Yeah.
Because the guys, and I heard at one point they didn't think it was working, and that was part of why they kept shooting him.
Right.
I don't know if that was just a rumor, but I've read that. So it's like he's trying to get this thing to work, and he's like killing the guy, basically doing it.
Right.
I mean, what are you supposed to just refuse when the guy, your commanding officer, tells you what to do? Like, I
No, you're
mean,
not supposed to.
right? So, I mean, obviously it sucks that he has to, he's probably part Patsy in this case.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the other two, though. I don't know anything about the other two. I'm gonna read that report.
It's
'Cause,
probably available, easy download somewhere.
yeah, well, it's been on the bottom of that one of those Globe and Mail. You can just says click here to read the report. It's great. The internets.
Oh,
Isn't
the
it fabulous?
It is fabulous. Oh, gosh. Well, we've got 44 minutes down. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I think
Yeah. But before we
not too
forget,
heavy.
can I talk about my trip a little bit?
Of course you
Just
can.
because it seems so weird to be so far away after. Like I've been back for about a month since the trip, I think. I came back on Victoria Day weekend, so now we're getting in close to a Canada Day weekend now, so
As long as you talk about the hanging tree,
Oh,
tree
the tree houses,
house.
yes. FreeSpiritSpheres.ca or .com. And yeah, we'll put a link on the site.
How cool is that?
But yeah, oh, that that was, yeah, my two highlights, you know, 2 weeks away, and I talked about it in our May podcast, so those of you who didn't hear it can go back and listen to it on our website, the.matrix.com, and, or download on iTunes, but it was just such a great experience, and people were saying, oh, you know, you're so brave to do it, and I never really thought about it that way, but it is kind of an oddity to go out on your own. You know, many people do it, and
rural BC, we're talking here.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, so why? Like, you know, just talk to strangers on the road, and it's kind of neat when, you know, out and about and seeing this, the craziness that is, and the wonder that is the province, you know, like, Smithers is a great highlight. I've talked about as, you know, when you and I've talked about the trip, but not on this podcast, of course, but so I want to sort of say Smithers is, like, probably one of the most beautiful places in this province. It's gorgeous.
Nice.
And Prince Rupert, and yeah, so mysterious, like, that town is a really neat place. And Prince Rupert and Williams Lake both got voted in ranked as one of the worst cities in Canada for various different reasons, crime and employment and that sort of stuff. And, you know, there are issues with that. But they're both nice places. I could see myself living there in either of those places for a period of time, you know?
Right on.
But the other than Smithers being the Alps of British Columbia, those tree houses in Qualicum Beach, or Qualicum Bay, more precisely, is a real highlight.
Qualicum Bay, okay.
So just north of, about 45 minutes north of Nanaimo on the island.
Right. Awesome.
So I'm drinking water and have a little tickle in my throat. but yeah, it was a friend of mine who had stayed in the Spheres a couple of times, and so I knew about it when I was planning my trip. I knew for sure I wanted to go there. I didn't have a life-altering experience. I'm still in my job. I haven't sold my house or haven't decided to move. But it's just when it sways in the wind a little bit. Like it's a giant sphere made of bended wood, and I think it's like a metal frame though, and it's fully insulated. You've got this tree. I've got this sort of bed and it looks like inside of a ship, of a small little yacht kind of thing inside. And the guys who did them, he used to build boats. And you just walk up these staircases that spiral around a tree trunk and gets up to the sphere, and the craftsmanship is pretty amazing, and you, every time you move it sways a little, and then when you hear the rain hitting against the tree, the trees, and you hear it against the sphere, and I mean, I brought a couple of discs of Golden Girls. I watched a Golden Girls episode while I was in the tree. Speaking of Golden Girls, and they had speakers that you could sort of plug in your iPod to, and you could, and when it's a sphere and it's fully insulated, you have a awesome acoustic in there. It's quite something. Just a fascinating experience. Just one night, I felt like a king. It's totally, like, awesome. I would totally do it again. Like,
oh, sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, but we'll put a link up there, and so you can take a look. And people can take a look. There's lots of pictures of the spheres, and I stayed in the sphere called Eve, which is the smallest one, where you can fit one person and two really cozy. I think if you're Asian, you could probably be a couple in there. But the other ones fit like three or four people kind of thing. So, or two for sure comfortably, and three. I don't know if you can fit four in any of them. But yeah, just highly recommend to everyone. And when I posted some pictures on Facebook, I got comments from people who rarely commented anything about me. Go, oh, hey, you stayed there? I wanted to stay there. Like, so it grabs attention.
It got a lot of attention.
I mean, if anyone sort of goes to the site and looks at the pictures, a lot of people will kind of tend to go, oh yeah, I've heard about that. Like they had a picture of that sphere in one of those, you know, Welcome to BC tourism commercials that played in the months leading up to the Olympic Games. It was right there, one picture, just really quick. And in those commercials. So it gets a lot of press, you know, and rightfully so, because it's a great experience and you can buy them. Like you can actually, I was talking to Mike and he was saying he wanted to recommend some of his clients who he's working on building those houses for, like the really rich and powerful people. And it's it's totally up their alley because it costs like in the hundreds of thousands to get.
Whoa.
Because there's lots of insurance and liability issues, right? So you have to put it up really carefully. Yeah. But and it's BC made, right? So like it's wow. It's right up their alley, and it's so unique, you know. It's not like you're making a treehouse, right?
Are they just gonna do more and more of these? Like, are they?
Well, the guy who runs the place and the couple who run the place, they can only have 3 spheres in their property. It said if they end up moving to a different property, then it can and they can zone it for a little bit more than 3. Then they will probably put a few more up.
Hmm.
But right now it's just the 3, and there's no plans to add more. And he sold a few. Like you can buy. You can actually buy them, but
wow,
most of them are sold to Europeans.
Hmm.
but yeah, so
holy crap.
It's cool. It's awesome. Highlight wow. One of the highlights of the trip.
But yeah, when you were gone, it's like when you came back, I was like, holy crap, you're back so fast. Like it just seemed to fly. And I guess it did for you.
It did. Well, it's like, you know, you drive 4 or 5 hours at a stretch. And we texted a few times, I think, during... Yeah. My trip and it went by really quickly, but at the same time it didn't, like I kind of didn't feel rushed, which is good.
That's the important thing.
And I spent the night in one night in the sphere, and I contemplate whether I wanted to spend 2 nights there, but I don't think so. I think I was the one night is great. I would spend 2 nights, like a whole weekend there, if let's say a whole bunch of us went and rented all 3 spheres.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a lot of fun, you know, unique, and I'd spend a couple of nights. But if just myself and I'm passing by, the one night is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But spending a weekend in Smithers or a couple of days in Prince George, which again wasn't my most favorite beautiful place, but it was really fascinating. I liked being there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 2 nights in Williams Lake, right? Like I felt those were good enough to just get a glimpse of these places. And the unique differences of all these communities in the province, but also a lot of the similarities. And you really get a sense of, you and I were both born and raised in an urban environment, right? And I wrote about it. I have a blog that I was writing on, and I wrote about this trip. And I said, you know, sometimes we hear this phrase in our work, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Like sometimes you don't know, like you have no idea what you don't know because you don't know it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, people talk about the rural urban divide, and you can say yes, there's a big difference between the big city and the small communities, and most people say yeah, but they'll say yes because it just in theoretical sense it makes sense. Of course there's differences, but you don't really get what that means, so you don't really know what you don't know, right? And now I feel at least I know what I don't know. I still don't get it all, but I know that there's big differences, and I get that there's big differences, right?
They're known unknowns instead of her unknown unknowns.
Exactly. That is exactly it. Oh, that's getting us closer to an hour, that ramble. But
No, it's good, though. I think a lot of people were excited to hear about that who hadn't heard it just from your voice.
Yeah, it was a big impact. And actually, when I tell people, and a lot of people who I work with in the field that I'm in, you know, pretty important people who have been working in the community sector for a long time, and especially a lot of provincial kind of organizations. And they said when I told them that my employer paid for some of my expenses because it was a benefit to me being out there just to get a sense of it for my work, people were thinking that was really good, and it actually was. I mean, it's a very fortunate thing to, you know, have a vacation and have your employer pay for some of it, right? I mean, I guess it's good for me that I was willing to do that and to take in some work meetings and just go on it with a little bit of a work context in my mind.
Yeah, right.
So it wasn't actually purely a vacation, but it was just a win-win, right? It's a win-win for everyone.
Oh, absolutely.
And it is kind of cool. Like, I think a lot of people who work in organizations or companies that have either products or services that go across the province really should get out there and they should, you know, send their salespeople out there or their admin people or just anyone just to get a sense of it.
Yeah, to really get
you know?
It. Yeah.
No, like, I'm looking forward to, like next year when I have my vacation, I'll split it the same way and do a couple of weeks and go somewhere else in the province. I don't know if I'll do a whole 2-week tour.
Is there anything left?
There it is. There's always
there's lots, yeah.
Like, I, you know, you have this right here on your wall. You have the Okanagan wine route.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't been to the Okanagan in decades. It'd be wonderful to sort of do that tour.
Oh,
I mean, I've flown into Cranbrook. I would love to do that sort of the Kootenai boundary area.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like to go more north than Prince George. Like I'd Dawson love Creek. To get up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Even
and
further.
Up to the Yukon, maybe.
Fort St. John or whatever is up there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's up there too.
Yeah. I hear Yukon's nice. So yeah.
So there's lots. I don't know if I drive all the way up there. I might like fly in a car or something. Yeah. Like it just a long way to drive.
It's a long way. We have a huge province for sure.
But yeah.
Wow. That's good to hear. I know you had a fabulous time, so that's awesome.
Well, now I gotta plan my next trip. I forget, you guys, right, we're all going camping in July, next month, which we'll have to podcast about,
Yes, of course.
My very first
camping trip. Maybe we'll do some on-location podcasting.
But are you and Elaine going? I can't remember what you guys have talked about.
We had talked about going to the island, actually Qualicum Beach.
Oh, right.
Or Qualicum Bay or whatever. That area, we had thought about it. There's some wineries on the west or the east side of the island. And just somewhere where there's, you know, some coastline. I really like coastline. Mm-hmm. Like beach. I like sand. I like just, but not even just that, just the water. I like just looking out at the water. That's why we love Tofino so much. We're just amazing landscape, really, and seascape. It's great for photos, you know, the dog loves it, so somewhere we can go with our dog Dexter.
So
we're looking at doing that, maybe a long weekend, like
cool,
you know, later part of summer or something like that would be nice,
you know. And the more I think about it, the more I could probably, like, for the next 10 vacations just pick somewhere in the province to go to. Like, I still haven't done Tofino, which I would love to do one day. Again, of course, Haida Gwaii. Like,
oh, that's the one I want to do.
Gosh, take a 10-day, do a sailing tour or something, or just like there's a lot of fun little things you can do. It would just be awesome to just.
Just love being out, like on the Gulf Islands. I love the Gulf Islands because they're just these little islands, and there's this, just. The texture of everything, like just the way everything is, like even Deep Cove, you know, like the fog and it's all misty. And I just.
Well, you would really love, you know, doing Prince Rupert Inside Passage.
Yeah.
Like you would just.
I'd die.
You'd die. You'd have a sensory overload, the kind of textures and the clouds hang so low.
Yeah. I'd love
you
that.
You would just love it.
That's. All I really want to do. It's all I ever really want to be. Really.
And that comes down to that drive from Smithers to Prince Rupert. And I said it to you in person, but I haven't really said it in the podcast. But when I was in Smithers and I met and talked to a lot of people in Smithers. And they, when anyone found out that I was driving west towards Prince Rupert, everyone kept saying, oh, I'm so jealous. It's the most beautiful drive.
Huh.
And it really is.
Wow.
When you go from Prince George to Smithers, it's kind of brutal. Like, it takes a long time, and it twists around. Mm. But once you get from Smithers, and you start to go, I mean, it's about the same for a while, but then the last hour, you start to crisscross the Skeena River,
yep.
And you crisscross the railroad tracks, and you start to see the really the misty mountains, and the forested mountains, and it is stunning. And like I drove a lot, and people can, oh, it's a great drive, and I'm kind of like, whatever, you know, I'm just driving, I'm looking for road signs, trying not to hit bears and moose and stuff. And you know, people say, oh, it's gorgeous, and I'm like, oh yeah, of course it was gorgeous. I'm not really thinking, like, I'm just like, it's just the highway, right? But that last hour. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure Elaine and I will do that one day, because it's on my list. Haida Gwaii, Prince Rupert, like that whole area, mid-province.
I highly recommend it. Okay, shall we wrap this up?
Yeah, I think my dog needs to go out again. Okay, like... Dexter, say hi, Dexter.
Say hi.
Hi. Oh, yeah, like get your eyes rubbed. Yeah. You can say something? No,
he
almost fell over. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Oh, almost 60 minutes exactly. So we will say sayonara. So thanks for listening. And as Justin mentioned, check out our Facebook group. Check us out on iTunes, thedotmatrix.com, most of all.
Sounds good.
All right.
And we promise not to take so much time for the next one.
Sounds good. We got it all out today, which is good.
Cool.
Okay, bye.
Bye.